Ryan Dixon and Rory Boylan host Tape to Tape, the hockey podcast by Sportsnet.
You say yes.
Think Bob. Bob did some very good things here. He built a foundation in this organization. And apart from all else, he put his heart and soul into this team every day.
Welcome to Tape to Tape, T2T. I'm Ryan Dixon. I'm a writer for Sportsnet magazine and Sportsnet.ca. Sitting to my left, hoping the axe never falls on us, it is NHL senior producer for Sportsnet.ca, Rory Boylan.
Keep your head up, Ryan, and don't cut to the center of the ice.
Yes. It's a dangerous place to be. Well, you heard it off the top, folks. Brad Treliving and the Calgary Flames relieving former coach Bob Hartley of his duties. We are going to touch on that. We are, of course, going to touch on the playoffs. Some big hits out there. Playoff time, man. Everyone's got to keep their heads up. Of course, you should know that you can subscribe to us in iTunes. Find us there. Rate us. Comment. Do whatever you want. As long as it's nice. Come on. Be nice. You can also check us out on sportsnet.ca. As mentioned, we will be checking in on the scene in Calgary with Sportsnet radio man Pat Steinberg. He is featured heavily in the Flames broadcast on Fan 960. We're going to get our finger on the pulse, find out exactly what's going down in Alberta. But yeah, the playoff series all 2-1 as we're laying this down today. Still into varying degrees up for grabs. We're gonna give our thoughts on what's gone down in the second round, but we also want to talk about the draft lottery. Rory, we now live in a world where good things happen to the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Amazing. I was expecting them to lose that for sure.
So here's my you know what I think? I think the biggest win of the night wasn't necessarily the Leafs getting first overall. It was not falling to fourth. I think if you went to Brendan Shanahan and said, you don't get first, but you won't fall to fourth, he would have shaken your hand and said, we'll take it.
Yeah. And I can't remember if we talked about this on the podcast last week or not, if going into the lottery, if you were given the choice to either lock yourself in at the number two pick, be guaranteed to have that number two pick, or play your odds with the lottery where you could fall down to number four, like which one would you take? And at the time, I kind of thought, well, I would just lock myself into that number two pick.
I would. And if you're the Leafs, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, because you only had a 20% chance to,
that's right,
to win, right? So, but hey, it worked out. And
it
now
worked
you
out.
Get, now you get Austin Matthews, right? And it can't be any other choice.
I don't
Patrick
think so.
Patrick Laine looks great and everything like that.
Yes.
But he's a winger, and you've got enough of those, and they're easier to get than defensemen and number one centers are to get. And this is a debate, I think, or a talking point that we get around most drafts where a guy has been the consensus number one for a long time, except for the Connor McDavid draft and probably the Sidney Crosby draft because they're different kinds of players. But Taylor Hall, when he was getting drafted, he was the consensus number one for a long time. And then at the end of the season, oh, well, what about this Tyler Seguin guy? He's pretty good, too. And then Taylor Hall ends up going number one. It was happened in John Tavares' draft with Matt Duchene making
the
late pick. If guys hold that number one position for such a long time, you get late in the year and you start to notice the number two and number three ranked guy a little bit more. They get talked about a little bit more, and then you start to try and poke holes into the guy who's been the number one for so long, when in reality, he is the best option. Sure, Austin Matthews has had a back injury. I don't know how big of a factor that's going to be. He's played in a league that, the Swiss league, that is very unconventional. Nobody's really done this before. He looked great in it, though.
Yeah.
But he's a big, very talented number one center being
strong.
Compared to, you know, it's weird to compare guys to past players, but he's been mentioned along the same lines of like Joe Sakic and guys like that. So you have to take him. I mean, this is the number one center Toronto's been dying for since
absolutely.
Matt Sundin left. It's
absolutely
obvious. You can't trade it. the podcast where we had the callers in, you guys had the callers in after the lottery.
Right after the lottery. Yeah. First two people had them going out of town.
Wanted to trade them. Like, come on, Toronto.
This just in. You're not going to get Domi, Ekman-Larsson, and Anthony Duclair for the top pick.
Yeah, I got to say it's crazy to me. Anytime I hear a rumor or a suggestion, a trade proposal involving Arizona, it always starts with Max Domi and Oliver Ekman-Larsson. Yeah. Why does it have to? Why do they have to give up both of them in any of these deals? I mean, they're probably not going to give up either one of them because they're both great. But both of them, give me your whole team, and I might give you both of them.
What a win for Winnipeg, too, right? I mean, to jump up from six to two.
Yeah.
So now you have Line A, presumably.
Yep.
I mean, don't forget, before the great Leaf rebuild, Winnipeg was the team that was touted as having this very rich prospect pipeline, and still do. But so now you see Scheifele comes on at the end of the year. People love Trouba. I mean, I know it hasn't quite taken yet, but he's a defenseman about to go into year four, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that could still really turn into something. Obviously, Ehlers was a rookie last year. You've got Connor Hellebuck. You got guys like Patan, Kyle Connor, the first-round pick last year.
And he looks great.
He looks great.
Yeah.
And now you throw in Line A and Marco Dano in the in the Ladd trade. You know, all of a sudden, Winnipeg is probably thinking, even by next year, because let's face it, they arrived early by making the playoffs last year. That was a surprise. And I think people weren't sure where they were going to go this year. Maybe some thought they could get back to the playoffs. I certainly thought they'd compete, but it's not a huge shock that they fell off the way they did. Now you're really starting to see what the plan was there. And they're big, right? Like, Scheifele's a big guy. Trouba's a big guy. Like, Line is 6'4". There's a little something cooking there.
I didn't think they would fall off as much as they did this year, though. I really didn't.
Yeah, because there's apart.
A
lot
of, for a while now, they've been the young team that's been budding, and last year it felt like they kind of finally arrived in a way, or they had taken that next big step. You know, sometimes teams that do that do fall back a little bit, but to fall back as much as they did was a bit of a shock. It reminds me a little, and it's not as drastic, I don't think, of the Philadelphia Flyers. Remember, they won 45 games, and then they missed the playoffs. They lost the draft lottery to Chicago, who picked Patrick Kane, and then Philadelphia picked James Van Riemsdyk second overall. And that was a team I didn't expect them to be that bad. And then the very next year, they go to the conference final.
Yeah. A couple years later, they're in the cup final.
Now, I'm not sure Winnipeg is going to make that much of a turnaround. I wouldn't be expecting them to make it to the Western Conference final next year, but I would expect them to take a big leap. Again, I do like a lot of what Winnipeg's got there, and I do think Line A is going to be in the NHL next year, too.
Everyone thinks the first three picks are in the NHL.
Yeah.
Matthews, obviously, for sure. He would have played in the NHL this year if he was born 3 days earlier. But both the Finnish kids, people, seems near universal agreement, they're NHLers next year.
Yeah, and Line A's an excellent goal scorer, but man, I've seen some of the passes that he's been making, too.
Absolutely.
Holy cow, the vision on that guy. So they remind me a little bit of that Flyers team. I think there's going to be a huge rebound for the Jets next year. I mean, as great as it is for Toronto to win that number one pick, I mean, Winnipeg moving up to two is franchise altering.
It is. That's I think in order, the biggest win of the night is the Leafs not falling to four, not necessarily getting one, but just not falling to four. And the second biggest win, even more than the Leafs getting one, is Winnipeg going 6-2, I think.
Yes, franchise player.
And you know what? Columbus, too. We don't know exactly where you're getting with Puljujärvi, but as noted, everyone thinks he's great and is going to play in the NHL next year. He's a winger as well, and he's big. But you look at, you know, they trade Johansson for Seth Jones. So you're not getting a center. You're not drafting a center, but you are bringing in a dynamic offensive player. So that's big. I mean, it created a hole when they traded Johansson. And while everyone liked the deal for both sides, the question was, so what's Columbus going to do to get some offense? And now, you know, Boone Jenner, man, he looks like a player. And they still have a hole up the middle. But I think Columbus's greater need after since they got Jones was for a forward who can move the needle. And it looks like by winning the third spot, they're going to get that as well.
Yeah. Is the biggest loss on the night the Vancouver Canucks falling? I mean, you struggle like this all year. Oh, you're terrible. And it's, okay, well, at least the consolation is we'll get one of these top three guys probably, and then you fall out of that, and it's all I mean, you're still going to get a great player, don't get me wrong, but it's not the same.
Things are not fun in Vancouver right now.
No.
Because, you know, we've touched on it, and know, Gare Joyce was talking about when we did the live tape to tape, Jim Benning, really respected hockey guy, great work before getting there. Who knows how things will pay? I mean, you can't, a GM, it takes time, but the rebuild on the fly, like, I just don't have a sense for how it's going to work there. And they didn't want to be drafting, you know, they didn't expect to be finishing 28th, 29th. They were trying to get back to the playoffs, as happened last year, and it turns out they weren't even good enough to be mediocre. They do fall to the bottom. As you said, now it's like, all right, well, at least the consolation is maybe we didn't plan for it. Maybe we're not the least who were eyeing this all along, but here we are. And then, yeah, you fall out of the top three. Not good.
Yeah. Nobody feels bad for Edmonton.
No, it's true. Well, we've touched on Winnipeg. We've touched on Vancouver. Yes, no one feels bad for Edmonton. The other Western team making some noise. After the draft lottery, the Calgary Flames relieving Bob Hartley, the man who was the Jack Adams winner just a year ago after Calgary's unlikely playoff appearance and first round win. We are going to speak with Pat Steinberg from Sportsnet, the Fan 960 in Calgary. Anyone who's familiar with the Flames broadcasts in Calgary certainly knows Pat. Pat, how you doing?
I'm good, guys. How you guys doing?
Not too bad. We're obviously doing better than Bob Hartley is these days. Was this a move that caught people off guard in Calgary, as it seemed to for the people outside of Calgary?
Definitely. And, you know, going back about 3 weeks ago, it was the Monday after the regular season came to an end, that Brad Treliving, the general manager, did his end of the year news conference. And it was a disappointing year in Calgary. They missed the playoffs after getting to round two the year before. And so he came out and did his news conference. And one of the questions asked to him was, what is the future of Bob Hartley? Do you anticipate any coaching changes? And his kind of thoughts were, he said, I don't anticipate anything. We're just starting the evaluation process now, but I don't anticipate anything happening in that regard. So you think, okay, well, he didn't close the door on it, but he certainly kind of poured some cold water on it too. So I wasn't really thinking about it. I certainly wasn't waking up every day checking my phone saying, is today the day that they end up firing Bob Hartley? So when we found out yesterday about 8 o'clock in the morning, it was a little bit of a surprise. I was definitely not anticipating it. I understand the reasoning. And when you look back to what Treliving said that Monday after the regular season, you're kind of like, okay, well, maybe he really was keeping the door open on that. Maybe it was something they were thinking about, but it kind of had slipped my mind. And he's less than a year removed from winning a Jack Adams Award as Coach of the Year. And so you kind of thought, well, I mean, they'll probably give him a little bit wider of a berth and a little bit longer of a leash if that's the case. But turns out they felt they needed to make a change, and they felt they needed to find somebody who is perhaps going to be able to move them in the right direction, or continue moving them in the right direction, but get them over the hump. So it was certainly a surprising move. A lot of people in this city were surprised by it, and certainly a polarizing move among fans here in Calgary.
What is the reasoning here? Is it just that Bob Hartley has a shelf life and that he grates on players after a while, and there are some coaches who are like that, and it's just time to move on and get a fresher voice? Or, I know they said it wasn't, is Bruce Boudreau a factor here?
Well, I don't think Bruce Boudreau or another coach is a factor. I don't think that was the main reason here. Whether Boudreau was retained in Anaheim or not, everything that I'm led to believe from inside the organization is this was going to happen regardless. So that's number one. Now, is Boudreau a potential candidate here? Absolutely. And would he probably be a good fit here or in Ottawa or potentially Minnesota or wherever he might go? For sure he would. So, but I don't think that they're necessarily related moves. I do think that Bob Hartley was probably going to be let go regardless. So the reasoning why, I mean, I think that they're, And Brian Burke said it on Primetime Sports yesterday. Brad Treliving alluded to it with us when he joined us on our program yesterday. Kind of said, you know, there is a little bit of a shelf life. Sometimes it's time for a new voice. And alluded to the fact that, you know, he felt that Bob took this team as far as they could go. It's time for somebody else to take him over the hump. And what he really talked most about, what I think was the most overwhelming factor for this move being made, was they are looking for change in the way they play. The Flames have been one of the league's worst possession teams under Bob Hartley. They routinely find themselves near the top of the league in block shots, near the top of the league in time spent in their own zone, and near the bottom of the league with time spent in the offensive zone. And there wasn't a lot of improvement over Bob Hartley's tenure. And I think it came down to the fact that Bob Hartley's philosophy and what he wants his team to do is a little bit more old school. And I think that in the minds of Brian Burke and in the minds of Brad Treliving, that kind of old school attitude may be a little antiquated for what the Flames are hoping to do. They believe to have success with the group that they have, they need to be more of a possession-based group. And those systems, those things in place under Bob Hartley and his coaching staff weren't necessarily there. And the results kind of prove it. So I think that was the biggest reason why they decided to make the change, because of philosophical differences. And if your general manager and your management group want the team to play differently than the coach wants to play, I think you probably have to make a move.
It's early days here, but other than Boudreaux, who was certainly the first name out of a lot of mouths, any other guys we've already heard kicked around as candidates?
It's been a few names. I mean, Boudreaux is definitely the one that everybody's buzzing about, and for good reason. I mean, he's one of the best coaches in the National Hockey League. His regular season record speaks for itself, and even though his playoff record is not as glowing as his regular season time, we're still talking about a guy who has been in Game 7 of a Western Conference Final less than a year ago, and, you know, they were close to moving on to round number two this year, and so he's still a very good coach. So he's definitely the guy that's getting the most buzz at this point. But a couple other names out there. Ryan Huska is the head coach of Calgary's AHL affiliate in Stockton of the American Hockey League, and he is a very accomplished coach in the Western League, has spent a number of years as head coach of the Kelowna Rockets and was very successful in doing so. And they've really, really liked what he's done in Stockton with their prospects and with more and more players expected to make the jump in the next couple of years from the American League to the NHL. I think a lot of people wonder if, kind of in the same light as Mike Sullivan in Pittsburgh and John Cooper in Tampa Bay, maybe that's the route the Flames go. And the other name that's been thrown around out there is Travis Green. And I know it's been maybe more bandied about in Vancouver because they're a little worried that maybe Green might end up leaving the organization. He's the head coach of the Utica Comets in the American League, the number one affiliate of the Canucks. He's had a lot of success. He sounds like he's one of the more kind of hotshot American League coaches, one of those guys, you know, similar to John Cooper, similar to Dallas Eakins and Sheldon Keefe and guys like that who, you know, sound like they're the next in line for maybe getting an NHL job. Well, I've heard Travis Green's name thrown around there a couple of times too. But at this point, it's still all very speculative. And I do believe the best candidate out there, if we're just talking about overall candidacy, I'm not even talking about fit for the organization or where he'd like to go, but you got to say Bruce Boudreaux is probably the best candidate out there just because of the pretty impressive track record he's got.
Yeah, and if it is Boudreaux, I mean, he's proven to be a guy who can coach a very offensive team, which we got in Washington and a little bit in Anaheim, but he also kind of turned Anaheim into a really shutdown team this year when they struggled out of the gate, so he can kind of coach both ways. If he did come to Calgary, what would his main priority be in with the Flames? Because how awesome would it be to see Boudreaux coach an offensive system with Goudreau and Monahan and Bennett, but at the same time, you need to have some defensive responsibility in here for such a young team that's still finding its way.
Well, there's two things that jump off the page to me with Boudreaux that make it a really intriguing potential fit with the Flames. Number one is the fact that, you know, you take a look at the numbers that his teams have posted, whether it be his time with Washington or then his most recent time with the Anaheim Ducks. Routinely, not only are they a really good offensive team, but they're a team that, because of the work they do offensively, they don't spend a lot of time in their own end, and they don't spend a lot of time defending. And I think the Flames have got some of the horses to be able to do that with guys like that you mentioned, some of the younger players like Goudreau and Monahan and Bennett. You throw in really smart and effective players like Michael Backlund and Michael Frolik, and they've got the forwards. They clearly have some very, very impressive horses on the back end. I think that they can play that brand of hockey if the systems are in place. So I think that's number one, where you're like, okay, Boudreau has got the history of being able to get that out of his teams. And number two, he's kind of had the track record of making an immediate impact when he gets to a new team. You take a look at when he got to Washington midseason. You take a look at when he got to Anaheim midseason. Well, the teams were able to engineer some pretty impressive turnarounds. And in the full seasons, Boudreau has coached the Ducks. All they've done is win Pacific Division titles. So he has an ability to get a lot out of his team and get a lot out of his group in the immediacy. And I think that's kind of what the Flames are looking for. Not for him to turn them into a Stanley Cup winner next season, but to get them from being, you know, 20 points out of a playoff spot and having their season done in January to maybe being a team that can legitimately, and not kind of in a fluke and dreamlike manner like the 14-15 season, get in the playoffs on merit and be legitimately a playoff team by what they do on the ice and not having to rely on third period comebacks and crazy shooting percentages and that type of stuff. I think that's kind of what makes Boudreau such an attractive potential candidate here, is that he's got the track record of getting that stuff out of teams in the, you know, very, very early going when he gets to his new squad.
Last one for you, Pat, then we'll let you go. We know they're looking for a coach, but we know they're looking for a goalie too. I mean, that's going to be a huge factor. What's your sense heading into the summer? How will the Flames address this?
Well, that's been the most frequent topic out here when we're doing talk radio. Like, there are so many different potential roads for this team to go down when it comes to their goaltending. You know, the one that I think has gotten the most credence and the one that I think people are maybe most intrigued at is the potential for getting a 26-year-old Freddie Anderson out of Anaheim. So Ducks go out in round number one. Anderson played well in the first round against Nashville, but here's a guy who's a restricted free agent. The Ducks are a budget team as opposed to a cap team. They've got a number of defensemen that they need to get signed. They've got John Gibson already. There's the specter of an expansion draft kind of hanging over everybody too. Do they have the ability to, A, keep Anderson if there is an expansion draft? And even if not, do they have the ability, B, to pay him what he'd probably command? I mean, we're talking about a guy who has been basically their number one goaltender. I know that he and John Gibson have split time over the last couple of years at different times in the season, but essentially, once the playoffs have hit and we take a look at the overall body of work, Anderson's been the number one guy. He's 26, he's controllable, and I think that would be kind of the number one target for the Flames to go after. But is there a realistic ability for that to happen? Mainly because the Flames and the Ducks play in the same division. We saw last year, Martin Jones eventually wound up in San Jose from Los Angeles, but they had to do the end around with Boston first of all to trade Jones there first, and eventually Boston would trade Jones to San Jose. So I don't know how realistic the probability is that a guy like Anderson ends up in Calgary. I wonder more if they go down the road of maybe trying to patchwork it for another year or two, and whether that means Kari Ramo, who has been here for the last couple of years, whether that means Yoni Ordio, who was the goaltender for the Flames down the stretch this year, whether that means going and finding a more affordable option in free agency and maybe having that goaltender here for a year or two. And what they're trying to do is buy time for John Gillies. And Gillies is a third-round pick from 2012, but he's a really promising prospect. Most people look at Gillies as the number one prospect in the organization right now because the other top prospects are all playing in the NHL. And so Gillies is going to take a little bit of time. He's going to take at least a year or two to be ready to be playing in the NHL. So there's a thought that maybe they might stopgap it for a year or two to give him some time. If Anderson is available, if that option is feasible, then I think the Flames need to go down and do what it takes to maybe make that happen. Otherwise, I think they might go the route of maybe an unrestricted free agent, maybe a guy that they have right here, kind of patchwork a tandem together for this season and next season. Hopefully it can be better than the tandem and the trio they had this year, and maybe it can give them a little bit of a better shot of being a playoff team when it's all said and done.
I'm smelling a 2-year deal for James Reimer. Pat, thanks so much for dropping by. We appreciate the time.
Hey, no problem, guys. Thanks for having me on.
That is Pat Steinberg from Sportsnet, the Fan 960 in Calgary.
Boy, if you're Boudreaux, is Calgary not the perfect situation?
Oh, yeah.
Way better than Ottawa or Minnesota, where Minnesota's got a lot of cap issues and Ottawa's got a, you know, an owner who likes to meddle a little bit. But Calgary on the up.
Absolutely.
Great GM. Yeah, it's such a perfect situation.
Absolutely. He could definitely land on his feet there. We're talking about some non-playoff teams when we talk about where Boudreaux might coach. We're going to talk about some honest-to-goodness postseason hockey when we come back for the next segment, the final segment, Tape to Tape.
Boyle, maybe a 2-on-1 across the blind. Boyle, right circle, drops it, high side, Callahan, left circle, Hedman, shoots, block, rebound, Boyle, shoots, score! Score! Brian Boyle! The Lightning win it! 5-4 in overtime! They lead the series 2-1!
Walking in front, redirect, a score, Merrick Fair, put it in! Fair gets the goal, and the Penguins have the lead, 2-1! Oh, tell your pa, I'm going to send you back to Arkansas.
Schwartz, to Shet, Dirk to Tarasenko in overtime. Shot clock, second one, back to Shet, Dirk, over to Steve, drive, rebound, Backus, score! The captain, game winner, bring on the Zamboni, and happy birthday, David. The Blues beat the Stars 4-3.
Moving in now, Pavelski, lead pass, Couture shoots, score! Logan Couture bring it backhanded tip, and the Sharks take the 3-1 lead.
Welcome back to Tape to Tape. Time to talk a little about these playoff series. We are recording this on a Wednesday. Wednesday, May the 4th be with you. So bear with us a little bit, depending on when you're listening. Things may have changed a little bit, but I think the series everyone was talking about before the second round and certainly as the second round unfolds is the Pittsburgh-Washington matchup. Interesting call in the Pittsburgh goal because, of course, before the playoffs, Marc-Andre Fleury had a concussion, wasn't ready to go. There was really no debate. And then Matt Murray was hurt and we saw Jeff Zatkoff. Now Murray's comes in. He's looked good.
Great.
He's looked great. How long is the rope for Murray, given, you know, this is obviously his first playoff. He's a young goalie.
Yeah.
Marc-Andre Fleury certainly has number one status, yet I'm guessing most people have heard a little something about some playoff hiccups in the past for him as well. So what if you are Mike Sullivan, how itchy or not itchy is your trigger finger?
Matt Murray is 5-1 with a .944 save percentage so far in these playoffs. So, to me, he needs to have at least two bad starts in a row before I even start considering it. And at that point, I'm still not convinced I would make the change because Marc-Andre Fleury, remember, hasn't played since March 30th.
Right.
So that's a factor. And Matt Murray, I mean, he allowed 4 goals against in game 1 against Washington and bounced back with a terrific game 2 and obviously a terrific game 3 where he made 47 saves. So I kind of think you're committed to Murray at this point. I mean, if you're changing goalies, like we're seeing with the Dallas Stars, I mean, Pittsburgh's situation is nothing like Dallas. But if you're changing goalies, you're in a bad situation. I don't know if I'd be more confident going into if Pittsburgh loses 2 games in a row and they trail 3-2 against Washington. I don't know if I'd be more confident turning to Fleury, who hasn't played in a couple months, or sticking with Matt Murray and hoping that he can find it again because he has been so good. And not just in the playoffs, but in the lead up to the playoffs,
and
he was really good.
And in
good
the
too.
Minors, right?
I and mean, in the minors.
This is not a guy who's come out of the blue. This is someone who people have been talking about saying, hey, there's something going on here. Pittsburgh's got this guy. He's going to need an opportunity at some point.
And it's not like Marc-Andre Fleury has a Henrik Lundqvist track record in the playoffs.
Correct.
Like you mentioned, it's very up and down. It's very inconsistent. So it's not like I would be, oh, well, we have to turn to Marc-Andre Fleury because he's going to be the guy who shuts the door for us.
But you know what the rationale would be if they get down 3-2 is the same as if you're losing 3-0 in a game and you go, whatever, it's not the goalie's fault, but get him out of there and let's shake it up, right?
And that's why that's the first situation where I ever even consider it. If he is terrible in game 4 and allows six goals on 22 shots or something like that, I still go back to him for the next game. Right. That's not even a question in my mind, just because he's been so good. But yeah, if they're down 3-2, I could understand a change, and I would definitely consider it at that point. I still don't know at this stage what I would do. I guess it depends on how bad he was in those two games.
What do you make of the two suspensions in this series? First to Brooks Orpik for three games, then to Chris Letang for one.
Well, the Orpik one was pretty obvious, right? I mean, it was very late. It was a high hit directly to the head. The Letang one, I was a little surprised he got a suspension, I guess, especially after they ruled that it wasn't a charge on the leap, which I still think he leapt into that check. I never liked that stuff.
Yeah.
And he didn't catch him in the head directly. It was kind of graze off the shoulder or off the chest, I guess, and then it hits him in the head. So I was a little surprised he did get a suspension, but it was interference. It was a bad hit. I didn't like that hit. You know, at first I thought it might have actually been a little worse than the Orpik hit, just the result wasn't as bad because I thought, like I said, I thought he leaped into it. I thought he caught him in the head, and it was late. Orpik's was definitely late, but he didn't leap into it like Letang did. But he definitely deserved a suspension for that. One game, fine in the playoffs, that's a heavy suspension in the playoffs, especially for a guy who especially has been logging like 30 minutes a game.
With that defense core, right? Like,
yeah.
That's like taking three forwards away from a team.
Yeah, how bad is that defense going to look in a game four now that they don't have? I mean, Letang has been such a rock for that defense, and
so
to be
good
without him, I would be shocked if we don't go into game five tied in this series.
Yeah. Speaking of big hits, there were a couple in the other Eastern Conference series in game three, Thomas Hickey flattening Jonathan Drouin, and then in overtime, Drouin did return in the game, and then in overtime, Brian Boyle with what some would call a little questionable hit back on Hickey, and Boyle had something going with Hickey before the game in the warm-ups, so there was a lot percolating there, and then of course, later on in the same play, Boyle goes down, gets the winner, and Tampa's up in the series. Mm-hmm. What have you made of, what did you make of that action in that series?
Well, the Hickey hit on Drouin.
Unbelievable.
That is, okay, here's a video on how to throw a devastating clean hit in the NHL today. That's textbook.
It's like they choreographed it. It's like Drouin came down, was like, okay, I'm getting ready to turn in. Now are you ready to hit? Like the way it unfolded was like, they must have planned this. I don't know why Drouin would plan it, but it looks like he planned it.
In that situation, you might just want to put the puck deep.
Chip it in. It's not dead yet. Yeah. Chip it in.
Amazing that Drouin came back in that game and then got the assist on the tying goal in the last minute. That was crazy. The Boyle hit, I didn't get as great of a view on it last night, but it did seem a little borderline. As of this recording, I don't think he's got a hearing scheduled, so we'll see if he gets out. That one was a little borderline. I still think that one is clean, though. I think the Boyle one on Hickey was clean, and it directly led to the winning goal, but boy, oh boy, the Hickey hit on Drouin reminded me of the Byfuglien hit on Mark Stone at the end of the regular season. I mean, that was Dustin Byfuglien, so that's a whole other
freight train.
It's like 10 on the Richter scale. But that Hickey hit, that was the biggest hit since then. Just devastating. The whole office last night, whoa, you can hear it rippling as everybody kind of watched that hit. That was, that was something else.
Tampa is such an interesting team because we all kind of wrote them off. Now, here they are inching toward the conference final. Let's say they get there and start getting some of their players back. We don't know exactly what the status of Stamkos and Strawman is, and they were both, you know, injuries or conditions that could be very long term. But the deeper it goes here and the more weeks go by, the greater the likelihood they get these guys back. And now all of a sudden, a team that, you know, in the beginning of the playoffs, you're like, well, great roster, but a little too banged up. Now you're looking at a team that went to the final last year, is getting some of its horses back, and is getting great play from Kucherov, from Drouin, and especially, I would say, not that Pittsburgh is a lightweight by any stretch. I mean, they've been a great team down the stretch, but to some degree, I feel like because of the defense that we alluded to before, there's a little bit of a limitation on Pittsburgh. So if Pittsburgh can end up upsetting Washington and Tampa draws the Penguins in the conference final, okay, well, you're still playing Sid and Malkin and a great team, but it's, I would say, not the same as facing the Washington Capitals. Just seems like a spring that you were ready to write off for Tampa could still hold some intrigue.
Yeah, I think Pittsburgh has a weakness that Washington doesn't on the blue line that Tampa could take advantage of, especially if you're getting Stamkos back.
Yeah.
I mean, the forward core has been amazing. Crazy. I don't think anybody really expected Drouin to be as good as he has been, and not just on offense, but he's been
How many teams now are like, man, we should have given up that prospect to get Drouin?
Yeah,
like, what
really
were we doing hanging on to our second best prospect? You know, like, that broke the deal. Damn it, we should have just traded him.
Absolutely. I mean, he has shown so much. I was never really a big believer in the guy, but he has shown so many
really
such a
creative
dimension. Yeah, creative and not afraid to stick his nose in there. At the end of the game last night, I'm not sure if somebody from the crowd threw something at Boyle or something, but as they were celebrating in the corner, the Lightning kind of turned to the fans behind the glass, and Boyle hit his stick up against the glass, and then they all kind of skated away, and Drouin was the last one there shouting at the people in the crowd. And it's stuff like that, and getting his nose in the scrums, coming back from the huge hit last night. I mean, he's just shown that kind of a physicality to his game I didn't think was really there, that kind of, you know, he's not afraid to get in there. So that's been something I wasn't expecting to see from him, and he's been so creative. I mean, that assist on the tying goal was something else. Kucherov, obviously, has been
rolling.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And that's a guy who's going to get a nice contract here very shortly. And then a guy who, because you're going to have to give him that contract, out goes Steven Stamkos. Don't need to. And off to Montreal, right, Ryan?
Yeah. Every day, we believe a little more. No, there's got to be some law of unintended consequence for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Like, something bad has to happen in the wake of something great happening. So
I think so.
It'll be, the hometown boy? No, that's not happening. It's too early to X anyone out in the West. Both series are 2-1 as we're laying it down today. But it sure feels like we're hurtling toward a San Jose, St. Louis heavyweight Western Conference final.
Well, I mean, the Blues, after their Game 3 win, they dominated that game. They look pretty good to move on for all the reasons we talked about in our Round 2 preview, that Dallas's defense is just not up to par. St. Louis, they're so hard on you, and they have so many different weapons to throw at you. And Dallas's goaltending, obviously, is just a complete disaster. I mean, Niemi, his save percentage is .889 now in the playoffs.
He's probably
the better option.
What would Lindy Ruff do to see Dominic Hasek back in the electrical?
Yeah, really. So that one, I mean, it is 2-1, and Dallas could, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised too if Dallas comes up and puts 6 on the board in a game 4. But I do think that one's pretty, I would be shocked if Dallas came back and won that series. Boy, Nashville showed a lot in game 3.
Yeah, and hey, man, this is a team that came back and won 6-7. In the first round series as well. So, you know.
I got home from work late one night this week. I think it was after game 2 of that series. And I loaded up PlayStation, started playing NHL 16 online. And there's a guy from Nashville, and he's this huge Predators fan. He's talking about, we're just totally overmatched in this series. They're giving us more than we can handle. And I was thinking the same thing. Like, they just looked outclassed in the first 2 games. San Jose was so fast. They were throwing just so much at Nashville that they couldn't handle. And then game 3 comes, and Nashville is awesome, and they look like they can hang with the Sharks and that they can make a series out of this. They haven't lost at home yet, which, you know, they say they are going to eventually have to steal one in San Jose, but you're not in trouble until you lose a game at home. So we'll see how they can come out in game 4, and if they can take that, then hey, we got a best of 3 series.
Well, the good news is the next time we're doing this, we're going to know who the final 4 are. There won't be any guesswork left, and man, by the time you get down to the conference final, you make the conference final, your team has had a hell of a year. It's a great run to get that far, and you're only 2 series away. So the next time you're hearing us, we're going to be talking about the final 4. It's going to be pretty exciting. We're going to be right on the verge of the final, and we are going to break down in depth, in fine detail, the Eastern and Western Conference Final. That will be the next time on Tape to Tape. That's all we have for you, though, this time. But come back next week for more Glass Rattlin' hockey action on Tape to Tape. Shame on you. When you go, it's a shame on you.
been Tape to Tape, the hockey podcast by Sportsnet.